You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This is Josh Bagelclass, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. This week, we're back with my co-host, Eddie Donaldson of Gorilla One. If you don't know Gorilla One, it's your connection to street art, graffiti, all things art. If you're buying art for yourself, your home, for investment, for a client, if you need to hire an artist for an event or a campaign, hit up Gorilla One or hit me up and I'll connect you. This week, we're on location once again with Bagel is our guest, a.k.a. Josh Klassman. We're sitting outside at the Rose Cafe in Venice. You'll hear probably some background noise, so you know we're keeping it real in Venice. Josh Bagel is a longtime staple of the Venice art and culture scene. He's been carrying around his camera since pretty much the 80s, documenting Venice street skate surf culture. He grew up with a lot of the top skaters and surfers and had access to shoot a lot of those guys, at their best, and took pictures of Venice when it was really at its prime with the pavilion. If you're not familiar with that, you'll hear the stories. You're also going to hear some stories about, the old days in music with Porno for Pyros, House of Pain, Limp Bizkit, much, much more. Let's get into it right now with Bagel live at the Rose Cafe in Venice. Take me back to the beginning. I know there's a lot of good stories, but do you remember the first record you ever bought?
God. No, I don't remember the first record I ever bought. I know the first like records I was given, which were like Beatles records. My dad gave them to me.
Sure.
But the first live act the first concert I ever went to was Chuck Berry at the Roxy.
Oh, shit.
And my dad threw down the calendar section of the LA Times. It was like, pick a concert for your birthday and I'll take you to any concert you want to go to. And I was like, Chuck Berry, he was all stoked on that, And sure. It was fucking awesome. I think I was like, I don't know, 10 or 11
How
or something.
How old are you again?
I was young, 51.
Jesus, Chuck Berry.
Yeah, dude. It was interesting sick. Choice. It was dope, dude. I was like, because my dad raised me very much rock and roll. Yeah. And I was like, well, that's the man. He's the one that like,
for sure.
Yeah. Got rock and roll, really on the map heavily.
Definitely. That's amazing. It's funny how, we were talking about music earlier, how like this, this shit all just flows together. And we think about sort of genres or, you're producing the EDM show or whatever, but we're all influenced by all the same shit.
Yeah, definitely. I love like the hip hop connection with everything. Right. Like we were talking about sampling.
Yeah.
What they sample and then you get into like checking out, you're like, oh, it was that song.
Mm-hmm.
I was explaining to this kid who's like getting really into hip hop the past week. I told him, I was like, the difference between East Coast and West Coast hip hop is, and I gave him the whole example of like, East Coast is very jazz based because that's what they listen to. And you could hear that in their music. And it was it's off time, but they made it work on time. I go, where West Coast is very funk, you know, related. Yeah, it's very, very bounce and low and chill and blah, 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 you know? And I go, you could hear that within the records or the songs. And he was tripping where he's like, oh, damn, you're right. I'm like, yeah, dude, like, you'll notice it now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's because, you know, like, before we were listening to hip-hop, we were listening to Roger and Zapp or Earth, Wind & Fire, the Gap Band, whatever, out here.
Yeah.
And then on East Coast, it was something different.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Like Miles Davis. It's so jazzy. Like, you were talking about Eric B. James Rock Brown. Kim, and I love them. Like, they're my all-time favorite. Like, seeing them play was, like, bucket list shit for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, so heavily, like, jazz-based. And I'm not a jazz person.
I
don't get it. I'm not built that way. But, like, when they sample it, it makes sense to me. It's super cool.
Yeah, I learned about jazz from hip-hop.
Going
back in the sample. Jazzmatazz.
Yeah.
Like, my son's all into jazz, and I'm like, wow, really? I never got into that. But he also gets that. He's like, it's also in a lot of the hip-hop you listen to.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, totally. The breaks.
Yeah,
fully.
So, wait, how'd you guys meet?
We've known each other from just back in the day partying on top of we toured together. That was when we got real close.
Was it the Napster tour?
The Napster tour, we got really tight because we knew each other.
Forgot about the Napster tour.
We were like, oh shit, you're on this? Cool. Like, when you see people that you know, you tend to want to gravitate
towards. We were together like a month,
That
was a month.
What was that tour?
It was Limp Bizkit, Cypress Hill.
And then and Capital I played parking lots or second rooms.
Okay.
It was
in some of the shows.
We terrorized that tour. That tour was nuts because there was a routing, but a lot of the times like the venues had to drop out because they were like, we can't do this guerrilla style thing and it's just way too sketchy. And they'd be like, okay, we have 3 days off. We're gonna be in Elko, Nevada in some shitty hotel doing nothing now.
I got some great stories.
It was pretty wild, man, how it all worked out. You were like, well, we're supposed to be here, but we might not be, or a new venue would pop up. It was very off the cuff kind of stuff.
And Bucky was on that tour with us. Were you in the room when Mad Mike's smacked Fred Durst's hat off his head?
No.
You knew who Mad Mike is, right? The motocross dude.
Yeah.
So I go downstairs for some weird reason. I think I was going to get some girls, and we were in a hotel in, I want to say, Raleigh. And they had taken the beds out, and there was a DJ in there. I think Turner was DJing. And some girls called from downstairs, and I went downstairs, and I saw Mad Mike in the lobby, and I was working for Red Bull. And I'm like, yo, come upstairs, we're partying. He walks straight in the room, and he walks right up to Fred and fucking smacks his hat off his head.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Dude, when we were in Waltham, in Mass, this guy that I used to, like, get gigs from, he was a crew chief. He was like, hey, can you hook my sons up? They live out there and they really want to go see Limp Bizkit, Cypress Hill. And I was like, absolutely, blah, blah, blah. So I hook up the two boys and we end up going back to the hotel, which was like next door to the theater. And it was all the guys from Cypress and Limp and everyone's like sort of partying and they're there. And they're like, is it cool we're here? I go, yeah, dude, just kick it. Next thing you know, they're like smoking fatties and B-reeling them. And they were just like, oh my God, we owe you one. We'll never forget this as long as you live, blah, blah, blah. So then when I got back off tour, their dad was like, how'd they like it? I go, yo, dude, they had like the time of their fucking life.
Sure.
And what
was cool
was they flowed too. They weren't like jocking.
Right.
But like they pulled me aside. They're like, you have no idea
what
this means to
us.
It was pretty rad.
My biggest memory from that too, well, I mean, I had a bunch, but so after the show, Josh, Fred had the room where he would invite all the girls to go. And, you know, naturally, show's over, I go in the room to get some vegetables and ranch. Like, you know, I didn't realize it was, like, the girl room.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and all the sound guys and stage guys are standing at this door, and they're looking in like, what the fuck are you doing in there? And I'm like, what's going on? I think maybe you pulled me out and said, yo, you can't go in there until Fred says it's cool. And I was
really?
Like, fuck that. I'm going to go get me some broccoli. And then Fred came in, and everyone was waiting for him to scream at me, because you know how he was on tour.
Yeah.
It was kind of a nightmare. No offense, Fred. We love you. And he walked up to me, he goes, I like you, man. I go, why? He goes, because you're not tripping on me. You're just doing you. You can come in here whenever you want. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, but everybody else was afraid to go in until Fred entered this room.
I forgot that he did that whole thing.
That had like 25 girls in there.
Yeah.
And none of the crew could go in until he walked in the room.
Fucking humor, dude.
That's so funny.
Are we exposing too much right now?
No, hell no. There's all kinds of crazy shit that you can be told.
That's mild,
fools
right?
would like be like, please don't tell that. My connection with him was weird because I met him more like in a party atmosphere and working at the Opium Den when I wasn't touring.
Oh, wow.
And he, like, the crew he put together, he sort of went after people that had worked for bands that he liked. That's why, like, a lot of the guys had worked for Tool and Rage Against the Machine, and he knew I had worked for Janes and Porno for Pyros, and, like, I grew up in Venice, and the whole Suicidal Tendencies connection.
Yeah, he put a squad together.
And then, like, loved, like, he was enamored with the whole, like, Venice scene and skating. He tripped that, like, Aaron Murray was my roommate at the time.
Yeah.
And he was just like, dude, that's sick, blah, blah. So, like, how he could be on tour, like you were saying, it's the whole, just because someone's not an asshole to you doesn't mean they can't be an asshole. Sure. I never dealt with it because he had respect for where I was from and what I, like, was about over here.
Yeah.
But he used to terrorize on certain people on tour.
He was cool to me, too.
Like, I mean, you know, he knew who to terrorize on and who not to terrorize on. You know what I mean? Me and him fully got along, and I love that he loved all of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know this, but he was one of the front runners before Catherine did it to direct the Lords of Dogtown movie.
Is that right?
And so Jeff Hohen hit me up and was like, hey, dude, what's he like? And blah, 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 blah. And I was like, he's really getting into wanting to direct because he's starting to direct the indie stuff and all the, like, music videos for people that, like, he brought into the industry.
Okay.
And, you know, bands that he got signed and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
And I told him, I was like, he'll do a really good job because he'll want to stoke everyone out.
He cares.
Because he really is enamored with what the scene is around here. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, not too many people know that one. And then I don't know why
it
didn't pan out. And then Catherine Hardwick ended up getting the director job.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great movie.
I just actually dropped off Prince to my friend who produced that movie, John Linson.
Mm-hmm.
He just got a bunch of prints from me recently.
Nice.
That's cool.
Nice.
And he also did the Runaways movie.
Oh, okay.
Same guy. And he created and wrote, I think, the first season or part of the first season of Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's his
vibe.
Big thing.
Yeah, for sure.
He's really cool. He's a good dude. I've known him, since I was in my teens. You know, he's older than me, but
yeah.
I know him through, like, Peter DeStefano, and then that was, like, his crew of guys that he hung with, and they're, like, Northside Santa Monica guys that would hang out in Venice, and they're all at least, I don't know, 6 years older than me or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, John's cool. But I was stoked. He ordered some really cool prints.
Nice.
Yeah.
So let's talk about photography a little bit. So how'd you get started taking pictures?
I was just always interested in it. I was honestly really into, like, war photography when I was a kid. And I think, like, I wouldn't say a lot of people would give you that answer, but I know there's people that would give you that answer, that there is something when you're younger you think that's, like, a cool aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I always just saw it as, like, wow, that's nuts that person captured that.
Right.
That is a, like, a life or death situation on top of that. I've always seen the beauty and the fucked up things, and there is a beauty absolutely to war photography. I mean, there really is. I mean, as fucked up as it could be in such a horrible situation, there is this art form to it. I'd like have major respect for anyone who's an actual war photographer,
and
that made me just want to go document. Like, my whole thought process of photography was always on a documenting level more than an art level.
So was it like a moment when you decided, like, to become a photographer, or did you, like, how'd that happen?
I would say that when I was like 14 and my mom got me the Nikon camera that I still have, the Nikon FM2, I call it the OG Nikon FM2. And the Vivitar 28mm lens, and she also got me a 500mm for surf photos, and that was at the Venice Camera Exchange that doesn't exist anymore on Venice and Lincoln, and it was all secondhand, and that was the life-changing thing for me, where it went from, like, oh, cool, picking up her Instamatic, and, like, oh, this is fun, to, like, okay, I want to take this serious, I really like doing this,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and that was obviously the days when you had to go develop your own shit and spend a half day in the dark room or whatever.
Totally. And then
it's a different level of commitment than today.
Once I got into Venice High and got to develop my own rolls of film and go buy tons of photo paper, or my homegirl Janine, I used to piss her off because I'd be like, let me borrow a piece of photo paper, because I'd rip through mine, and then I'd be like, let me borrow some. And one time, it's a great story. She's my homegirl from the Venice Breakwater. I grew up with her. Awesome photographer, Janine Guest. And one time I was like, dude, just give me another piece. Give me another, like, you have to, like, you're my homegirl.
Yeah,
and right. She stood up in class and she was like, eat my fucking pussy, motherfucker. Stop fucking asking me for paper. And I was like, whoa, okay. Whoa. Like, I was like, damn, I didn't know, like, I was bugging you that bad. But, like, being in the dark room was, like, 80% of the time at Venice High. Like, I lived in that thing, you know? Sure. I loved it. I just totally geeked out of it. I couldn't wait to fucking, like, see the shit blown up. I could tell you that I definitely ruined rolls of film that there was probably really good stuff on that I just, like, did my little figure eight thing, opened it up, and it was jet black, and I'm like, whatever. And I'm like, there was probably such good shit on there.
I'm sure. Yeah, I remember that ruin, like, opening the camera bag by accident or some shit, and it opens up in your backpack, and then you ruin your reel. I remember all that.
I wish I could remember, like, what those photos were.
Yeah, you know? No doubt. What you lost.
But you said something, I think, in one of the interviews I saw about, like, you were just taking pictures. You didn't really know
what you had,
or you didn't know that people were going to appreciate what you were doing in that
not
way.
At all.
Which I get, right? You just, you're a kid and you start shooting your friends and, you know.
That's what it was. It was just documenting my world and my friends. And my friends happened to be some of the best skaters in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and even my friends that didn't skate, just taking pictures of them and RC'd. And, like, you know, I guess you hope that it will mean something. But, like, when you're a kid, you're like, dude, 30 years from now, I'm going to be dead by then.
Yeah, nobody's
dead. You know, and then now I'm like, you know what? I'm glad this all happened on the back end, because it means so much more, and it is looked upon in such a different way.
So when did you start to realize what you were doing and the impact that it was having?
Like the last 4 or 5 years, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. Not till very recent.
Yeah.
When people started contacting me, like, every day, it's humbling as hell, man. It's people get at me, and they tell me how much it means to them, and thank you for capturing that, and it's a history, and I'm like, I'm so glad people see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And they all know that it's a very personal take on it all.
Sure.
You know, which I like as well. Like, they get that. So you're getting more intimate.
I mean, I think that's what we want, right?
Yeah.
We don't want, you know, everyone has a camera now.
Yeah.
Right? And so I can take the same picture you can, but if I don't have the same relationship to the subject, it's not going to mean the same thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I miss, like being an art dealer, is the authenticity in the shots that Bagel was able to get, because it wasn't, there wasn't an end game. Now everybody's like, I'm going to be a photographer, I'm going to take pictures of my friends, and I'm going to make money. And you lose that level of you know, authenticity, or keeping it real. It's like these kids nowadays, there's just no, they're a photographer 2 years, then they're a rapper, then they're a fucking director,
totally.
And they're, you know, like, turn around, you're like, fuck, DJ. They did everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, and when you look at Bagel's work, it's like, you know, it's so real. You know, you got Tuma smoking
that.
A fucking joint, and he's 15 fucking years old.
Totally, dude.
And if you know Eric, you love Eric, and to see him in that, like, that moment is priceless.
Yeah, I love that photo.
Yeah, it's great.
I think that, I mean, that seems to be what you're attracted to, the people that, I, at least a lot of the people I see you work with are just cats that just started making shit for themselves or for the neighborhood or their friends.
That's right.
I mean, nobody was really thinking about a gallery show or
I say it all the time when me and Josh are on business calls with people. I'm like, we're just normal dudes that just lived our life. And, like, so Biggie Smalls' first show in L.A. was at my club. Like, I didn't know who Biggie Smalls was going to be. I was actually angry that they were late. And they, you know, and I would have, if I knew, I would have captured that moment.
Yeah.
I would have had the photos.
Oh,
nowadays,
man, all the shit
none of that goes
that
by.
That we didn't think
I kicked myself
to shoot.
In the ass for
oh,
things.
My God.
Like, okay, some of the stuff got thrown away, but then I kicked myself in the ass with things that I'm like, damn, I should have shot that. Why did I just think it was going to be there forever?
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you one thing I didn't shoot, and I'm still on the fence of, like, standing by it, but I'm like, historically, I wish I would have. When I left for my last tour, they were just starting to tear down the pavilion, and when I came back, down. I didn't take one photo of it. I was so furious that they destroyed that that I was like, I won't take one picture of that. Like, I took it beyond personal.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's photos of it that exist. You can Google it and check it out, but I'm like, I personally did it.
But not from your
eyes. I was so pissed off about it, man.
Yeah, talk about the pavilion. I think a lot of people aren't familiar. Obviously, it's been gone for a long time now, and a lot of people aren't familiar with it, but I know it's an important spot.
So the pavilion was, there was an inside theater, and there was a outside theater that you could barbecue, and it became a graffiti pit by the time my friends and I were teenagers and young adults.
Sure.
And it went through this metamorphosis of this, like, really cool community center thing to, like, this dilapidated, fucked up area that we just love, because we surfed at the Breakwater and the pavilion was at the Breakwater, so it all was sort of the same thing. And then you had that oil field that was next door that was the Breakwater wall that we kicked it at the beach, which that's what the skate park is now. And so it was all sort of one thing. That's why a lot of my photos, when I say, like, where it's at, I'll say Venice Breakwater / Venice Pavilion.
Sure.
And then the city just, like, let it go to shit. Like, every once in a while, there would be a gig. Like, they didn't use the inside at all. That was, like, just deader than dead. But the cool part about it was that's where the cop substation was. Basically, like, where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And all the most fucked up things we did two feet away from the substation. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's always the big joke.
That's,
and
so funny.
We'd watch the cops, like, just chase their tails, and we're like, do-do-do-do-do, you know, like that. It was, I don't know, it just went with that era by the time we got our hands on it. You know, like, I went there when I was a little kid with my mom and dad, and there would be, like, a concert going on, and there would be actual barbecuing going on. By the time we were there, it was like the bums barbecuing pigeons, and it was all fucked up and just broken down, but we're like, we love this shit. Like, it just went with that whole era, you know?
So let me ask you this, Bagel. Like, speaking about how it was for you and, you know, your parents' generation and your generation, what about now, the generation of Venice?
I mean,
like, what are your thoughts on how it's changed?
It's
definitely changed.
I can tell you this, that if you're talking about the kids that grew up here and you're talking about them as a generation, like I was saying, like, a lot of my friends' sons and nephews and nieces and all that, they follow in our footsteps. They just live in a more sanitized Venice than we did, but their way of thinking is an old school way of thinking, very much. You could definitely tell who's, like, when you go to the skate park, you know who those kids are and who the other kids are, you know? But as far as, like, gentrification and all that, it's every day it's a battle. Every day it's worse. Every day fucking, you're like, wow, I hope that place doesn't shut down because that other place finally did, you know?
Yeah.
I walked around Venice 3 years ago, and I literally walked all the way around and found every mom and pop that still exists. That it goes back to wishing I would have taken photos of certain things where I was like, I never took a photo of these places. Take photos now.
Yeah.
These places have been there for 30 plus years because this shit may not exist.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I learned that lesson, so... You know, maybe that'll be worth 7-30 years from now.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's a good lesson, right? Is it is, it's never too late, right? And as much as, you know, we can always look back with nostalgia at the past, but today is going to be our nostalgia in 30 years.
Yeah. Right? I
think that's less than 30, though.
Yeah.
Things are moving a lot faster.
Definitely.
So I think 5 years from now, that shit'll be hot versus 30, because things are
happening. That's one of the biggest things I tell any person that's a photographer and sort of, like, I don't know. That's one of my pieces of advice I give to them is no matter what age, I just go, hey, man, like whatever you take today, tomorrow it's history. It's instant history.
That's right.
Yeah, so no shoot doubt. Everything, man. Just like go nuts on it. Even if it doesn't make sense, it will at some point. Like I learned that lesson. So like, trust me, like I'm stoked I have what I have. But I had a lot more and I could have got a lot more. So do it. And I still do it. I make myself go out and pound the pavement and do it, you know? Like the photo that I'm giving you for Malibu,
yeah.
I went up there because of, it was 2 months after the fires. And I went up there and I was like, this is interesting, man. Like, you know, you don't see it like this. And it was all this destruction. And then what my friend had told me about the specific photo of the yucca plants coming out, like he's like, you know, that's because of the soil, because the ashes and it's, you know, new growth is coming up. And I'm like, damn, glad I went up there and shot that.
Grab that.
You know, and I'm like, that's cool that he schooled me on that, you know. But as far as, really quickly, sorry, but as far as the younger generation and battling what's happening around here, they definitely do just... They do because they keep the soul alive. Like, it's getting more and more enclosed.
Right.
It's harder to find what makes this place cool still, but you can find it if you know where to look. I always say that. And, like, these kids grew up here. They know where to look and where to find it. Yeah. You know, it's the wink and nod of, like, we're going to the place you motherfuckers don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, it still exists, but, you know, it's a battle, dude. It sucks, man. I don't know why people want to suck the soul out of a place and sanitize it, that wasn't what it was about to begin with, to make people think an area is cool. And you're like, why would you want to do that, man? Like, once you make it sanitized, it's a wrap. And
I think it's the same thing.
Funky enough, you know?
I think it's the same thing we were talking about, right? Of like listening to the hits without understanding the samples, without understanding where all the shit came from.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah, you don't have to fucking have a music history degree to turn on the radio and enjoy the songs, but that doesn't mean you get it.
Yeah, totally, right? Absolutely.
And I think it's the same with Venice, right? And like, you know, Venice to me, I don't live in Venice, I live in Marina, but like, I've always been fascinated that like this tiny little, it's not even a city, right?
It's a little tiny
village.
Little beach such town.
Small
beach town like, in the big city.
Such a huge impact on the entire world. Right, yeah. And we were talking about this yesterday. The reason that there's a skate and surf shop in every city on the planet is because of Venice.
Oh yeah.
Right, and we exported culture everywhere, and it's attractive. People want to experience it, but they're gonna experience it through their lens, right?
Yeah, totally.
Which is safe. Sanitize. Yeah. If that's who you are,
that's how you see it.
Yeah. It is like how you brought up the fact that like it's a trip how like tiny it is. It's made such a big impact. That's one of the definite bragging rights here. It's like
for sure.
Yeah, dude, we're like we get that and like we do love putting it in the face of others. And like, dude, you can fucking hate us. Like we love to be hated.
Sure.
And people secretly love this place, but they hate us. They love the place, they hate the people.
Sure.
And we're like, cool, dude, fuck you too. Mm. We're like, that's why we are the way we are. We love it if you hate us.
Yeah,
but you don't have what we have.
Right? Yeah, that's
and that's what,
it what is,
pisses
though.
You off, and it goes back to what we were talking about of like Hawkeye versus, you know, fucking Frank Burns. You're like, yo, dude, you're those dudes. You know what I mean? And you're just pissed off because you didn't grow up in this and you saw from the outside looking in, and then you want to be like shitty to us because of that, and then you get really bummed when we strike back. You know what I mean? Like I always say, we're not underachievers in Venice. We're underdogs, and we bite back extremely hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's true. Yeah, it's true, man. That's definitely how it is. And like to this day, like back in the day, everyone was like, why the fuck would we want to go down there?
Right.
And we're like, because it's fun as fuck. That's why. Now everyone's like, we're down to go down there. I'm like, yeah, because it's safe now. Yeah,
right, right.
Like,
exactly.
Fuck you, dude. You know?
That's funny. So when you're a kid and you start taking these pictures, right, and you have you know, you have access to a culture that an outsider, if I was a photographer and I just came in, a lot of those kids, they wouldn't. So, did you ever think about, like, was there shit that you didn't shoot because you didn't want to, because maybe they you didn't want that on film?
Nah, not really. Nah.
Okay.
No, I honestly, I wish I would have had more photos of that because my camera probably just wasn't on me.
Sure.
And I missed great opportunities, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I missed just because I had my camera on me a lot, but I also, there was tons of times I didn't want to lug it around, and I'm like, God, I should have just had it on me every second of the day, you know?
Yeah.
And then, there was truth be told, there's a lot of times that I just didn't trust myself. Like, my friends and I used to rage hard, and I'm talking like just get hammered, blacked out, drunk when we were teenagers and young adults.
Yeah.
And not once did I ever go, I'm gonna bring my camera.
Yeah, it's hard to hold on to the camera.
Take pictures of this cool thing we're gonna do, because I'm like, dude, I'll break it or lose it.
Yeah,
like, that's why, like, I never ever once brought that particular camera on tour with me.
Yeah.
Because when I was touring, I was just like, oh, is it, dude? I'll just get hammered on a day off and fucking fuck it up or something. Yeah. And most of my touring shots are all just fucking throwaway cameras.
What was your first tour?
Porno for Pyros.
Uh-huh.
In 1996.
You used to live with them?
I lived at the Shangri-La for about, I want to say it was like 6 months. So my son's mom and I were together at the time. She just found out she was pregnant. We're like the typical story, LA story. And we're living on Pacific Avenue. I had just got laid off from my job bartending at the firehouse across the street.
No shit.
I was doing construction, but it wasn't really paying the bills. She didn't have a job. She just found out she was pregnant. We were behind on rent. We ended up getting evicted. And Perry and my friend Roger Leonard were like, hey man, why don't you come up to the Shangri-La? Like, put your stuff in storage. Come on up. Have free rent. We have the place for a few more months. We have a chef, she can eat well, she's nice. Pregnant, you know, blah, 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 blah. You could go do construction. So we moved up there. And it was funny because I'm like so stubborn with it. Like, I literally drove into Venice every day. Like, I was just like, I am hanging my hat there for a minute, but I'm coming back home every day. And then I would go to the valley to work construction, and they saw me just like get up early morning every day and be gone and all day long. And then they finally were like, hey man, when this album's done, would you be interested in stage magic? Because I was like, how do I get in this industry? Like, I don't want to do construction.
Of course.
And I was like, what can I do? Is there something I can do so that I can learn? And I was very like enamored with like, whoa, this is new. And they're like, yeah, dude, well, you could be our stage manager. Mm. And my friend Sean London, who I had just met at the time, they're like, he'll teach you how to stage manage as it goes along. And they just like, it was a baptism by fire. They're all go. And I just did it and learned as I went. And I was like, I want to do this because I see this as my way out.
Yeah.
And then like very shortly, we're back in Venice. Once that pad went away, you know, I was able to save money. And I wasn't stage managing yet. That was still doing construction.
Right.
I didn't start touring until we like moved back to Venice because the album came out months later because they were recording Good God's Urge up there. I also sang on the song Freeway, but that was before her and I went up there.
Nice.
And then I didn't know like the whole history of the Shangri-La. Like, I didn't realize like Robbie Robertson.
I don't know it either.
Okay, so it's an old brothel from back in the 50s, I want to say, that like Hollywood types would go up to get away and not be seen in Hollywood, and they could do their thing. Then somewhere it turned into a recording studio, like a house recording studio.
That's the one in Malibu, right?
Yeah, and that's the one that's in the movie The Last Waltz, where all the interviews are being told, like the opening scene where he's like playing pool. That's that pool table. And the band owned it, Robbie Robertson and the band.
Yeah,
and that's where they did their recordings, and that's where that whole film is being, like they walk by our room and Perkins' room and all that. And the whole recording area is sort of like, it's still the big recording area. Tons of bands have recorded there. Like
sure.
Didn't Bob Dylan Isn't the bus? Like there's a little bus studio that Rick built or somebody built.
Rick owns it now. He did that docu-series on Showtime or something. Mm-hmm. What's cool is, so I have pictures, I have really cool photos of them like practicing in the kitchen and just like real random shots of the whole place. And there's a like a plaque. Not really a plaque, but it's like the letters spelled out the band, and they put it in cement.
Oh, cool.
And Rick Rubin had that jackhammered out, and he has that like hanging up.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's like, cool, dude, stoked you like did that. That's the historic part of that. Yeah. And so that's my whole connection with that place and Porno for Pyros and my start in the music industry. It was just sort of like we were talking about, there's guys that are like, I did crew in high school, and then I went to college to learn lighting and blah, blah, blah. And they hate guys like me. They're like, oh, damn, you were friends with the band that just went for it? It's like, yeah, sure. Dude, like, oh, well, fuck you too if you don't like it. You know, like, hey, man, personality goes a long way, and so does hard work.
Yeah.
Because most of those other dudes are like the dudes that you would not hang out with outside of work at all. You know, you're like, oh, you're that guy. You know, and they're just like haters on it, you know?
Yeah.
That's all they have within the four walls of that work. And I'm like, yo, dude, I have this whole life outside of work and did way before this. And I'm sort of a dick when it comes to really putting in those kinds of people's faces the fact that me being from Venice got me in that industry.
Sure.
Me being from Venice is what got my photo seen. And I know it's something I constantly say, but I'm also someone that beats a dead horse like crazy because I do like to fucking piss off certain people with that kind of stuff. And I know that I'm doing it, and I'm like, and what the fuck are you gonna do?
Right.
Like, sorry, dude. Sorry that your life wasn't as cool as mine and you grew up in some place that was lame and fucking you got in an industry that you thought made you cool, but you're not.
Yeah.
You know, and they hate it. Like, I'm all, dude, if I was into that industry today, nothing would change, you know, with who I am and my background. It all starts here first,
mm-hmm.
You know. I'm very prideful with that.
I mean, I think there's something about that flow.
Oh, totally, absolutely. That is definitely, flow and style are a major thing here, and that's what is drilled into your fucking head, and we're all about it for sure. And my dad was someone who was very much all about that kind of vibe too, and it made sense that he like loved living here. Same with my mom, but my dad was more about it, where he like sort of drilled that into my head, like watch that guy skate and watch that guy surf, and this is like, see how smooth he is and blah, 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 blah. And my dad didn't even surf and skate, but he loved that I did, you know? And my friend Brian, may he rest in peace, he used the word flow a lot. He loved that word. And I'm like, that's what it is, dude. It's all flow and style. And if you don't have that, then fucking, you're just the other people.
You're lame, dude. You're fucking lame.
Yeah. You don't get it. You're the uptight person, you know, that you know the technical shit.
Sure.
Sometimes it's not all about that, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just about the natural ability. You know, I don't sit there and go, I have the greatest eye ever, but I'm stoked that I have a good eye, and I'm stoked that people see it, because sometimes people see things I overlook.
Sure.
Because it's your photos.
Of course.
You know what I mean? It's like when people tell me, the way my photos make them feel is the way other people's photos make me feel. Like, I'll be like, oh my God, that photo, just I'll geek out on it. It can literally be a picture of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But like with yours, I'm always sort of like, oh, I wish I would have, or.
Of course.
You're too close to it. And so I really appreciate when people do tell me that, because I'm like, man, that's cool to know that they see that and that it means something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, that's like, I think it's important to be able to take that in, right? Because we all are too hard on ourselves.
Fully, absolutely. Right? I'm like crazy hard on myself in all kinds of ways. But like, I like, I love the photo, like that photo of Tuma smoking a joint. Like, I go, that is now my new favorite photo of mine if I had to pick one. That one has just become my favorite. But what it means to other people, I'm like, oh, damn, that's like what they'll tell me. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, I look at it differently. I'm like, that's my friend smoking a joint. It looks like, to me, the cover of one of those old time magazines, it's like, marijuana gateway drug. Do you know what your kid's doing? But people don't say that. They go, it reminds you of when I went down there and I did this. Sure. So the first time I was, you know, I went and got acid down there. Yeah. Like, it brings all that up.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's super cool because I don't see it that way because I grew up around it.
Of course.
I wouldn't say we're jaded from it, but you definitely,
you see it every day.
Something different.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, this coffee has me just fucking through the roof.
Rocket fuel.
It's full on.
What are you shooting these days?
As in, like, gear or just in general?
Yeah, just like, what kind of stuff are you taking pictures of?
Well, like I said, I walked around the neighborhood. I take pictures. I take pictures of all kinds of stuff around the neighborhood, like certain like posters, like the anti-Bonin posters. Mm-hmm. I don't know the person who makes them, but they are the shit. So like anytime I see them, I'll run home and grab my camera and I'm like, I gotta get this.
That's funny.
Like I said, old establishments that still exist around here. Mm-hmm. I've taken my camera to certain events and I have shot the load-ins and the load-outs. Shoot the event. I just strictly shoot the before and after because it's the gritty part comes off well with the film, and I've taken portraits of certain people that I work with and stuff like that.
Skate collar shit, huh?
Yeah, fully.
That's right.
The skating stuff. I take photos down at the skate park, but it's more of like the kids that I know. And it's more of like, hey dude, let's shoot on this day. I don't go down constantly and do it. It's like, I like it. It's just not something that I'm super amped on. I'm amped on the kids that I know and seeing how sick they rip. And I know that they like getting the, like an old school type photo from me where it's like, it looks old instantly because of the film and the camera and all that. And so I get stoked that they're like, yo dude, I want one. I want you to shoot some photos of me and I, you know, on film. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And just stuff like that, just documenting and preserving, you know. Every once in a while, something crazy will happen and I'll just either be lucky
happen to be there,
have my camera, or I, like I said, run home and go get it.
Dude, that's interesting that you said you shoot the load in and load outs, because when we started taking Red Bull to Coachella, we took it to him, not to the bands.
Yeah,
the bands go get it.
We're feeding the crew. Oh, dude, that was...
Because it's fuel. And our first place was like dropping cases off to the stage guys.
Right.
Because those are the guys putting in the work and that we really appreciate it.
Dude, we were
that goes to the flow and the soul of
totally,
shit, you know, the people making this happen. Not the guy that's getting overpaid to come sing for fucking an hour.
Totally, dude.
We did that too.
Yeah.
Our first place was like, here, bagel, here's three cases. Load them up. Dude, in a barrel.
We would rip through Red Bull.
Of course.
And, dude, we would just be like, it'd be like a billion degrees out and shaking. And I'm like, what is this shit?
I'm sorry, dude.
Yo, dude, get the next band on. And everyone would just be out of their fucking minds. My production manager, Westy, would be like, yo, dude, like, you can't drink that many.
Can't drink four of those.
Dude, these go down so easy when they're, like, completely iced. And he's like, dude, you've got to stop.
Not for hydration.
Yeah, fully, dude, totally.
You will OD for sure.
Fucking
healer. I remember one year, somebody came out with that, whatever it was called. It was another competing energy drink.
Oh, yeah.
And they dropped off two pallets at Coachella. We dropped off one. Ours was gone because crew was just coming and sucking it up in like 2 hours. And the last day of Coachella, which I think it was only 2 days at that point, all that other energy drink was still sitting there.
Damn.
Both pallets. It was like half of it.
It's all crickets.
Gone. Yeah, and our shit was gone in like 2 hours. Me and Oli were like, fuck, what happened?
That's, I get to do that one. Me and a bunch of my friends I work with, we do the whole like, dude, we've been to Coachella when it was 2 days. Mm-hmm. And then we remember when it went to three. And I remember we're like, how in the fuck are we gonna survive a third day?
Right.
And then we just finally got used to it. Yeah, now we're, and then they're like,
now it's stagecoach.
And we're like, how are we gonna survive 2 weekends, right? You know, and then you just eventually, you're just like,
more Red Bull.
AMs and PMs, dude, you just do it. Lots of caffeine, lots of caffeine. Funny, man.
That's amazing.
But yeah, like that's a lot of what I shoot. I definitely wanna start taking my camera again now that the pandemic's eased up and we're back doing concerts and events. I wanna start shooting the before and after. I'm really lucky more with the Insomniac camp, mm-hmm. where like Pasquale and Forrest, they really have always backed my photography in a very cool way.
Sure.
And so they don't trip that I take photos of the before and after, and it doesn't get in the way of my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to start taking more of that because I didn't really do that when I first got in the industry years ago.
I think we should plan a show called Load In, Load Out.
Yeah, right.
And fully. All it is fucking trucks, equipment.
There's just no gig. People just watch you work.
Sweaty ass dudes at 4 a.m. loading equipment.
Just pissed off. Yeah, like 16 hours. You're like, this sucks.
Classic. That'd be cool. Yeah.
I just did Rolling Loud.
Uh-huh.
And that's like the one hip hop show that Insomniac
right.
does with the Rolling Loud guys. Like they do it together.
Yeah.
And it pissed rain on us on the loaded.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
it super pissed rain on us on the loadout. Like brutal.
Yeah.
Fucking it. We're just like, dude, and we just get so done. And the whole weekend was fine. And, I kept going,
yeah, I remember.
Do we need any more proof that God hates production people? Like the weekend was just fine, but the load in and load out was just brutal, man.
So Pasquale gave me tickets for my kid. He knows this. And he's like, tell your daughter to come see me. She can get on stage. And she was too shy.
Oh, wow.
Ava was like, I can't do that. And I'm like, why not? It's my boy. Like, just call him.
Right?
That show's wild, dude. It's the only one we do where we have 2 stage managers. And because it just gets nutty. And it's a whole different animal, dude. Yeah, it is like so
is a whole
beyond
animal.
The opposite of EDM. You're just like, whoa, dude, this is fucking nuts, dude.
But I was excited when I saw that they had done that deal because, you know, hip hop, usually the production's not great.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pasquale is definitely
they go big
like
on that one, man.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's it's a best of both worlds.
We did one in New York a couple years ago at what Mets was it? Where the Mets play?
Shea.
Eric B was there on my stage, nice. And I went up to him and I did the like, I never do this. I just saw you in LA like a month ago. Uh-huh. It was a bucket list thing. Can I take a picture with you? And he's like, fuck yeah. And I was like, fuck yeah, nice. Dude, that was the shit.
That's cool.
I had Fat Joe. He ended my stage out there. And
okay.
So a whole weekend of super unprofessional acts being dicks,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
So Fat Joe's tour manager comes up to me and he's like, dude, like my size, short dude, sort of same demeanor. And he's like, look, man, we're super professional. I have my people in check. We run on time, don't worry about it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking in my head, like, yeah,
right.
sure. They come up, they have a mob of people with them. They come up on the stage, perfectly on time. The tour manager looks at their crew of people and he goes, not past that line. And there's like, you know, it's like where the two decks meet. Uh-huh. There was this, like the little line. No one walked past it. Joe went up there and fucking crushed it. Like absolutely crushed it and schooled everybody and ended perfectly on time. Right. I could not stop thanking them. I was like, dude, you guys were like the shit after 3 days of a crazy fucking gig. I was like, you are the fucking shit. They're like, we told you we're pro. And I shook their hands. I'm like, that was amazing, dude.
But that's what we were talking about, right? Like, he's been in the game so long.
Yeah, it's business to them.
Right.
You know, they know, like, the young dudes don't get that.
And
you see that. You're like, oh, you don't get that. You're not going to get your money if you don't do shit the right way. And the older guys are like, we're making our money, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
You're getting it out.
No, I think we see that. I'm sure you see that with skaters.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, you see it with artists, right? That they, some.
Yeah, some.
They, you know, at some point you figure out, it's a business too. We were talking about this earlier. If it's just a business.
Right.
Oh, nice. Jane's Addiction.
Never heard this song, only a thousand times.
you know, that we were talking about that earlier. Like, if it's just a business, that's not great.
Yeah.
But it is a business too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's some, you know, it takes us a while to figure that out and figure out how to do it.
Well, that, it, I think it takes people a while, and you could definitely say, I'm sure all the hip hop artists feel this way when they first start, to artists as well, like you were saying, to be comfortable with the business aspect of it, yeah. You know, and be like, you don't want to be like, I just want to make tons and tons of money because I'm in this for the money. Like,
right.
If you do that.
Yeah, nobody wants to fuck with that person.
Get the fuck out if that's it. If you have no passion with it, but like, yeah you should also have your self-worth and, you know, and like embrace that as well.
For sure.
You know, and I get that. And like, I think that all those hip hop artists, they get that at some point, because anytime mm-hmm. I've ever been to a hip hop show or worked one, the old school artists are always the ones that they got their shit together. Dude, I had Wu-Tang at Coachella.
Oh yeah.
Dude, I had them with a 50-piece orchestra. Mm-hmm. And we were like, there's no way we're getting the whole Wu-Tang here at 6 a.m. for soundcheck. Mm-hmm. Dude, every fucking single one of them were there at 6 a.m. for soundcheck. They handled, amazing. Thanked us, and bailed. And we're like, damn it. My friend Wes, he was like, that's because they're pro, dude. This is, you know, this 50, is business. You know what I mean?
Let's acknowledge they're old.
Yeah, it takes a while to get to that point.
Men.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. Like, when it was Meth and Red, there was like some shows on that tour that like one or the other didn't show up. You know what I mean? They still it was still a thing.
Well, they were in their 30s. Dude. Right? Yeah. And they were still you know.
I remember my production manager, Chris Grattan. Chris was like, it's always a crapshoot if those dudes are going to show up or not. I'm like, really? And then on tour, I was like, oh, damn. Like, you weren't kidding, man.
Yeah. No, I think you got to learn some of those lessons for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, it takes time.
Absolutely.
Think about that. What do you tell young photographers that you meet?
Okay, well, one is take photos of everything.
Yeah.
Shoot everything. Just literally document it all. And even if it seems ridiculous, just document it. Add what's personal to you.
Mm-hmm.
On the technical end, I don't tell them shit. I'm like, you figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's you're shooting film or digital, this is what I use.
Right.
I also do not hate on digital. Mm-hmm. I'm very much an old soul, and I'm very old school with things, but I also do not hate digital. I love the instant gratification.
Of course.
I just personally don't really shoot a lot on it. I choose to do what works well for me and what I'm comfortable with, and that is with my original camera and Tri-X 400 film and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't hate on it, and I understand that, you know, the newer generation gravitated to that and they shoot with that. There's also a lot of younger guys and girls, men and women, that are going out and buying film cameras and shooting film. And so I always just told them, this is the film I use and this is why, because it's a grainier documentary style, you know, type of film.
Let me ask a question. Who's your favorite photographer?
I mean, locally, the person I looked up to the most photo-wise here was my friend Steve Schulp that I was telling you about earlier. He has great archives. He just chooses not to really break them out that much, and I've begged him. He's got a lot of cool surf shots, and a lot of them are black and white.
Oh, cool.
That's the other thing I was gonna say, just off subject really quick, is if you look at my photos or his photos, a lot of us around here, even though we have skate and surf shots, they're shot very documentary. Mm-hmm. They're not shot as what a typical skate shot is.
Action.
Yeah, it's very documentary. Yeah. And like with mine, I pulled back a lot because I wanted you to see the background.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that I was very mindful of, was get it all in, pull back, don't go too close, you know? As far as like famous photographers go, I really like that guy, Bruce Davidson. I mean, dude, his shit is...
He's a portraits guy?
Dude, his shit is amazing.
Nice.
He's the one who shot the Beastie Boys.
Oh, okay,
He didn't shoot the cover, but they used an old photo. I went down the rabbit hole one time with his photos, and I mean, he has these pictures that it's like stories within stories. You see, like, he's definitely was mindful of getting things that you don't see right away.
Nice.
He took this one photo up from like a window looking down, and at first you look at like the person walking on the sidewalk, but then you notice there's like this sort of creepy dude looking out the window of the person on the sidewalk.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got super into his stuff. Bruce Davidson, man, his stuff's great. Like, he followed these like this greaser gang around.
Okay.
And he took photos of them and just like literally just stuck with them.
Oh, nice.
Took all these photos. They're super cool. You know, it's like that whole, you know, sleeves rolled up and the cigarette pack.
Sure.
And the chick's got the scarves on. And there's this great photo where there's this older black couple in the back of a bus, and there's three of the like greasers in the back with them, and like it's like a friend and a couple. Mm-hmm. And they just look so shot out, like they had been partying all night. And it's really telling because you're like, they're in the back of the bus at the time. They didn't have
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're like, yo, man, like, fucking, we're down with you. We're going to sit back
chill.
Here. Yeah,
sure.
It's a really cool photo.
That's cool.
Super cool.
Nice.
He also covered a lot of the, across the country, a lot of the civil rights stuff, mm-hmm. like tons of it. He took mm-hmm. the famous photo of the kid that has vote across his mm-hmm. forehead.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an amazing picture.
Nice.
Really
nice.
Cool stuff. He's got really scary photos of like people eating at a counter, and there's like redneck white dudes like surrounding them, mm-hmm. you know, kind mm-hmm. of shit. There's a famous one where this young black woman's like eating breakfast, and this white woman's next to her just looking at her, like the most fucked
mean
up look.
Her.
I mean, this guy just fucking got the best photos
wow.
of that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Did you see that picture of my mom at the sit-in in Louisville?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
That I posted on the internet?
Yeah.
So my mom got arrested when she was 16, sitting in the first sit-in in Louisville in a white restaurant.
Wow. Yeah.
36 kids got arrested. She
oh, crazy.
Was Muhammad
Jesus.
Ali's cousin.
Crazy.
And it's
crazy
amazing.
That, like, it's not that long ago.
Yeah,
to
really
think
not.
About it,
not
man.
At all.
It's so nuts, dude.
Absolutely.
Absolutely nuts.
All right, I got it. Let's do a quick lightning round before we let Eddie get out of here.
Okay.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
Jesus, that's a loaded question.
Venice?
I don't travel.
No, you don't
travel.
Yeah,
I wake up to it. Honestly, man, God.
Palm Springs.
That, no, hell no.
La Quinta, what
you
is it?
You know what, man? Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? Fresh. Like, the North Shore of Hawaii, I don't go enough.
Sure.
But, man, it is a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I nice. Would say, because I don't get to go to it enough.
Who's your favorite DJ?
A toss-up between Aaron B and Muggs.
Dope. Both dope. What's the last great book you read?
The Sam Giancana book.
Oh, yeah? I haven't read it. It's a great story, though.
He was gnarly. It's a pretty
yeah, for sure. I'm gonna look that one up. What movie do you think you've watched the most?
Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
All-time favorite. First time I saw it was like right after it opened, and my dad took me to the Cinerama Dome to see it, and it was a life-changing theatrical experience. It was in Sense Around, whole thing, and I was just floored by it. I have watched it every which way.
I was just reading some book about how that movie like almost broke the studio.
Oh, yeah. There was like all kinds of crazy shit. There's a documentary called Heart of Darkness, a filmmaker's uh-huh. apocalypse, all about that.
Oh, really?
It's amazing.
Okay.
Absolutely amazing.
Who's somebody that you haven't met that you've learned a lot from?
Bruce Davidson.
Good one. Okay, if I worked for you, maybe on a stage, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
You're fucking killing me. And there's about 1,000 people that would tell you that's what I would say.
I'm
You're
sure.
fucking killing me.
I mean,
That's
what it's like
be
out there.
15 minutes early, because being 15 minutes early is on time. But that's like, everyone should be telling you that in that industry.
Yeah.
But You're Fucking Killing Me is definitely number one. There's people that do imitations of me saying that.
Is that right?
And I'm like, I don't even battle it. I go, yeah, it's deserved.
That's hilarious. Dude, thanks for doing this, man.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun
thank
talking
you
to you.
Thank you.
Great
you
stories. Eddie
Bagel,
as always.
Yeah, man.
My man.
I appreciate it. Thank you for
the
coffee.
Nah, this is dope, man. Yeah, for sure. Yo, that was Bagel on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you like. Leave us a comment, a review. Let me know who you'd like to see on the show next, or don't. Most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.